Monday, February 19th, 2007, the Joint Committee Ways and Means Education Subcommittee.
Chairman, the Senate's representative.
The Senate is absolutely representative. So,
yes.
Yes.
We've got
a subcommittee of the subcommittee. Today we have public hearings on House Bill 5029 and 5030, the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board of Naturopathic Examiners, Occupational Therapy Licensing, Board of Radiology Technology, Speech Language, and Licensed Dietitians. And before we launch into the discussion, starting with the Veterinary Medical Examining Board, I'm going to turn it over to LFO analyst Deborah Manthe, who's going to talk about kind of the agenda and what we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Devlin, Senator Walker. As you said, House Bill 5029 is a budget bill, and it's a little unusual in that there are 8 agency budgets. They're all standalone separate agencies, but they're all in the same budget bill. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a public hearing on 6 of them today. These are truly what we were calling expedited agencies. They're very clean, straightforward budgets, not a lot of policy issues. And so each agency is going to take around 10 minutes or so to go hit the highlights for you. The other two agencies that are in here have some revenue issues they want to bring forward, and so we'll be hearing those on March 9th. The only agency that has a fee that's included in the fee bill would be the speech language pathology and audiology. So having said that, I guess we could get started.
Great. Thank you very much.
I was afraid I didn't have the right notebook with me, but I guess I didn't need to worry.
No, you did not.
One thing you can count on being on a Ways and Means Committee is these notebooks spawn.
We appreciate it. So I'd like to call up the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, Lori Nakanen, the Executive Director, and I'm going to take a shot at this. Is it Dr. Emilio, is it DeBess? It is. That is so exciting. Right. And good afternoon. Please state your name and then it's all yours.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Lori Nakanen, Director of the Veterinary Examining Board. This is Dr. Emilio DeBess, who is our chair, as well as the State Public Health Veterinarian. I'll give you a little background on the program. We were established in 1903 and operate under authority of ORS 686. We have 8 members appointed by the governor. 5 are practicing veterinarians, 2 are public members, and 1 is a certified veterinary technician. We administer practice examinations, we issue licenses, we hear and adjudicate complaints, and take disciplinary action as necessary. We currently have 2,200 veterinarians licensed in the state, 859 certified veterinary technicians, 36 euthanasia agencies, and 148 euthanasia technicians. We receive and resolve an average of 200 valid cases per biennium. Valid complaints generally involve allegations of surgical or clinical malpractice, substance abuse, unlicensed practice, and rarely, we have actually 2 right now, criminal activity. We currently have 38 open cases to resolve. Board staff and members provide technical assistance to licensees as well as general information and advice to the public. We also approve and monitor licensee continuing education. We haven't raised our fees since 1992. In 2006, we increased the cost of the VTNE, which is the Veterinary Technician National Exam, to reflect a temporary increase by the organization that owns the test and sells it to us to administer. Subsequently, they have dropped their price back down to $105, and we will be dropping ours as well by rule prior to the next administration of the test, which is June. We don't charge licensees fees for a number of things that other states charge for, like getting a verification of a license or a duplicate license. We refund application fees on request, even though we're not required to do so. And the director reclass package, which was denied by DES, would not have required a fee increase. The most important area of improvement for what we do, since we're such small agencies, is in data collection analysis. and distribution. We have a very good licensing database that is continuously under improvement. In fact, between the time I wrote this and being here, we have added a little feature that is sort of a prompt so that this will give us a list of licensees whose intern permits or any of the other licenses that expire sporadically rather than on December 31st. This new improvement will enable us to get that list and generate the notices via email or by print. I did bring some other improvements that we've done with the database, and I'd like to just basically tell you what those are. And a lot of this has happened just in this biennium. We've developed these new improved features. One of the biggest ones for us was the web-based customer satisfaction surveys, and it has enabled us to get surveys like the one that I've attached to the, I think it's the third page of your, where it says how rotten we are. And this is actually a case that is related to legislation that we're trying to get passed that gives us authority to inspect facilities. Technically, it turns out we don't have that authority, even though we have rules that require facilities to maintain certain minimum standards. And we discovered through a little glitch that we actually can't go in there. So Senate Bill 134 hopefully will fix that for us. We have business continuity planning, and Felicia's going to talk more about that when she gets up here. This gives us real-time access to all of our functions, our database. We also have daily backup of our database and on and off-site storage. One of our off-site storage areas is Chicago, so if something bad happens in Portland and it didn't happen in Chicago, we'll still have access to all of our records. And if something bad happens in Portland and Chicago, we're not going to worry about that too much. We can now scan. We're going to be looking at reducing the paper that we have. Our statute requires us to keep application information indefinitely. You can imagine since 1903 we've acquired quite a collection of paper. So with our new scanning ability, we're going to be reducing the paper files that we have to keep. We have LEDs access. Some of us do. Others are still waiting for approval to do that if we decide we need to do it. Back to my canned thing here. The average time, one of our first measures is average time from receipt of a new complaint to completion of the investigation. We had a little problem with this in 03-05 because we had one complaint that had actually 79 separate complaints of animal abuse as well as other things, and it was a very complex case that involved a lot of media contact and a lot of he said, she said, and by the time we went through all of those 79 cases, we were only able to discipline this licensee for bad record keeping because of the evidence just didn't pan out. But because it had been such a high-profile case, we couldn't just, we had to give every effort to it. So that kind of dropped our performance measure in that category. The next one is percent of decisions not contested, appealed, or upheld on appeal. That should be or and upheld on appeal. We've been pretty on target with this, but in 2002, actually I think it was probably in this last biennium, partly because we don't have that ability to direct licensees to undergo competency exams, which is tied to our ability to do license or facilities inspections, we had issued a notice to a licensee. We were forced to withdraw that notice because it turns out, again, we didn't have the authority to issue it. And this involved a case of a veterinarian who has been currently is under criminal, is being charged with child sexual abuse and incest. And we thought that we should at least be able to have this licensee evaluated for competency to practice with vulnerable populations and subordinate female staff. But again, we had to back off on that. And that kind of messed up our performance, our target there. And our last two are actually combined into one. It's improved public perception of agency effectiveness and efficiency. And as you can see from the little bar chart that I've attached, we've pretty much met our target here. It's a little difficult for us to get, we haven't figured out how to get good data from complainants to the board because 99% of them go away feeling that we haven't done our job because we haven't taken somebody's license away. And so we try to explain to the best of our ability that we have due process issues, licensees have rights, and we have evidence burdens to meet when we do these things. But generally, I think the public, at least the public that has brought complaints to us, unless a license has been taken away or some other action has been done, I think the public perception is that the board is not protecting the public as much as it is protecting veterinarians. We know better than that, but again, that's a public perception. We're not sure what we're going to do about it other than try to get more information out there. Licensees think we're pretty great, as you can see from the chart. And again, I did attach that negative one just because I liked it so much.
Excuse me, Ms. Markman. Representative Barnes.
Just a quick question on that last point. With the confidentiality requirements that we have, there isn't a whole lot you can do, is there, to explain to the complainant what happened beyond what you, I suspect, are already doing?
Right, Mr. Chair, Representative Barnard, that's correct. ORS 676 restricts what a health regulatory licensing board can disclose pertinent to a complaint or investigation, and unless the board imposes or issues either a proposed notice of discipline or a stipulated agreement or a final order, the public is entitled to know only that the board did not find discipline. So we do have cases where we have a veterinarian undergo a number of remedial things, like go back and get more education or study, or we tested some people, but unless the board issues the disciplinary notice, we can't tell that to the public, and that contributes to the perception that it's already happening. And you know, unless we change ORS 676, that's going to continue.
May I follow up? Thank you. Is there a bill that would remediate this issue at all? Did you know that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, there is nothing at this time. I've had conversations with the professional organization about changing ORS 676 to at least keep a proposed notice non-disclosable, and then also be able to give more information even in the absence of a final order, but it's still in the discussion phase. And I have been advised by our counsel that it would be very difficult to change that because it affects so many different agencies.
Right. So if I could just complete the loop. So you're not in a position, even though you may ask for a lot of remediation, that doesn't result in some kind of a final order in which that's disclosed?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, because of the way 676 is written, we can only say no violation unless there's a proposed or a final order. So we cannot tell the public. For example, if you filed a complaint and 6 or 8 months later the board felt confident that the licensee was better able to practice and wouldn't repeat the mistakes, we couldn't tell you what we had done in that intervening period, only that the case was closed without violation.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think I'm done. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Martin. And Dr. Bess, you're supporting? Okay. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. And you can see that stimulating effect to bring everyone here. So thank you. Your powers of your powers of persuasion are very very impressive. So now I'd like to call forth the Board of Naturopathic Inspectors, Ann Walsh, the Executive Director, Rick, is it Marinelli?
It's actually Greg Garcia.
Oh, okay. Is there a Rick Marinelli?
There is. He's our board chair.
Okay.
And I'm a board member.
Okay.
He was, I forgot to change that.
That's okay.
Last minute change in plans. Good afternoon, representatives and members of the committee. My name is Ann Walsh. I'm the executive director for the Board of Naturopathic Examiners, and I'm here to request approval of the governor's budget for our agency for another 2 years. The Board of Naturopathic Examiners was established in 1927 by the legislature to license and regulate the practice of naturopathic physicians in Oregon. We have been doing so, and the board consists of 7 members, 5 ND members, and 2 public members. We meet biannually, six times a year, to discuss ways to improve communication with both licensees, practitioners who are in other states who want to come to Oregon, and to the consumers who we are. That is the mission of the board, is to protect those consumers. We are, our authority comes under Chapter 685 and Oregon Administrative Rules 850. The administrative and clerical support is provided to the board by one executive director and one administrative assistant. Currently, that position is the Office Specialist 2, which I have requested, the board has requested, be reclassified to an administrative assistant 2, so that they can take on more of the workload. But because of the classifications, they aren't able to do some of the things that they should be able to do because their classification is restrictive. And currently that would change with the approval. The board assures public safety in the practice of naturopathic medicine by examining for qualifications, issuing licenses, assessing and monitoring continuing education, and disciplining practitioners in Oregon. Office staff review applications, respond to public and licensee inquiries, issue licenses, track continuing education, respond to public concerns about the practice, and if those concerns require investigation, they do so in a discipline program. The board currently has three performance measures. The first one deals with complaints, and we track complaints from their initiation with the board until their completion. Tracking was started in 2003, and the board is exceeding what we hope to do. I'd have to say 75% of the complaints are communication issues, 20% are actually practice issues that can be dealt with by education for the doctor, and probably I'd say 3 to 5% require more restrictions on a practice or a practitioner to assure public safety. Our second performance measure is continuing education. All licensees are required to do continuing education every year, but what we hope to do is to encourage more education and a broader education. So the board has started actually providing continuing education programs themselves. We've had the authority, but we haven't had the staff or the opportunity to go forward with that. In May of 2006, the board offered their first continuing education program, and it was on ethics, which is a very big issue in healthcare. It went over really well, and Dr. Garcia was the main proponent of that. He did most of the work on helping me get that set up. And then our last performance measure is customer satisfaction. We use the same process that the board uses, the online web survey. As you will find with all the other agencies, we all share a lot of those kind of resources. We have found that there are some areas where our communication is a little bit, it's not that it's bad, but it's just not as high as we'd like it to be. And those are the areas that we're working on communicating through the internet. I'm hoping to eventually offer community service education to rural areas so that they have a better understanding of what their rights are and what our responsibilities to them are. That's something that we are continuing to look at as very important for the practice. Part of our continuous improvement information technology is a very big part of that, and we have, as a group of agencies, have a information technology upgrades that are continuing to improve. The board is hoping to go into online renewals, which will save a lot of time for the licensees and should assure more timely renewals. And then, actually, in 2005, part of our accounting went to shared client services from the Health Department of Human Services. And that has changed how we look at what our fiscal, what our revenues are and what our expenditures are. It's, we have a better understanding, so we can, we know where we're going with our budget in a truer sense, I believe, since we've gotten that. Since the internet has become such an important part of the communication, the board is striving to, as I said, look at doing web-based renewals for licensees. We're also looking to expand the education of the information that's posted out there so that the consumer knows where to go and how to access the information they need to be as knowledgeable as they can on the practice. I don't really have much more to add. Do you have any questions?
Are there any questions on Ms. Walsh?
That's actually a good thing, I would say.
It's a good thing. I'm sure I could answer them.
Yeah, I would look upon that favorably. So, is it Dr. Garcia?
Yes, it is.
Were you planning on making any statements?
If that's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I would like to just make a brief statement. Representative Galizio and members of the committee, I have served on this board since 2000, and I'm nearing the end of my term. I've submitted my resignation to the governor and to the board. And the growth of this board and the complexity of the issues that we are faced with as a statutory requirement to increase the standards of practice and the standards of care within the profession. I'm actually very proud of the work that this board has done and of the standards that we've met. The ethics seminar at the Governor's Hotel had over 200 licensees, and I think we've sold an additional 300 DVDs of that conference. So it's that, I think, is something that we have a right to feel good about. We also co-sponsored with the Oregon Pain Commission the conference that met the American Medical Association's Class 1 category for continuing education, and that's a first for the naturopathic profession. So as I leave the board, the decision not to change the classification of the executive director here, and this is not solicited by her, this is really my own concern, is that for the long-term stability of where we are, the number of licensees in Oregon has tripled since I came on the board in 2000, and I think it's going to continue to grow. The college here in Portland continues to attract a lot of licensees. So I just feel that as I leave, this is a concern to me long term, that to replace someone with the kinds of skills using the internet, using the types of issues, regulatory, all these kinds of things as our board matures, just requires more complexity, and I think the classification is something I would just urge you to support. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Garcia, and thank you on behalf of the committee for all of your service. We really greatly appreciate it. And are there any further questions?
Representative Barner, thank you, Mr. Chair. For a new revenue committee member, can you show us where that reclassification request shows up in your documents?
It would be Representative Galizio, Representative Barner. It would be under the program units. It was a policy package, and I. It was denied, so there's not a whole lot of information in there on it. Because it's not part of the recommended budget.
E7.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Ms. Walsh, Dr. Garcia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, now I'd like to call up, now we have the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. And I have on the agenda Felicia Holgate, the Executive Director, and Genevieve, help me with your surname pronunciation.
D-Ram.
D-Ram. That was easy. That was perfect pronunciation by you as well. So thank you very much for helping me out before I butchered your last name. So, Ms. Holgate?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Galizio and members of the committee. I'm Felicia Holgate, for the record, and I'm the director of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. Genevieve Duran is a currently practicing occupational therapist and is chair of our board and has been chair for 3 years and just was reappointed to a second year term. It's an exciting year for occupational therapy because it's our 30th year for the board, which was created in 1977. We went from 300 licensees to 1,450, and if you look at the chart under our agency presentation, you can see those numbers continue to grow. The Oregon Healthcare Workforce Needs Assessment, also in Oregon, talks about the need for the continued need and the increase for occupational therapy in Oregon. The board has two occupational therapists, one occupational therapy assistant, and two public members on the board. I would like to briefly tell you what occupational therapists do, because I know it's something, a profession a lot of people don't understand. Occupational therapists work with often a very vulnerable population in many settings, like nursing homes, rehab centers, hospitals, home health, or schools. Many occupational therapists, probably in Oregon about a quarter, work with kids in schools, and they would work with helping them learn how to write, how to hold a pencil so they can write, or a better way to eat or dress, and especially how to deal with attention issues and how to interact appropriately with other people. Many work with the disabled, those growing old or injured, so they learn how to how to perform what are called activities of daily living. I think a lot of you are aware of the ADLs, how to dress, cook, eat, how to get in and out of a bathtub with grab bars, or how to learn to cook if they're in a wheelchair and planning to go home, or in a walker. We have an Oregon occupational therapist that's a certified hand therapist, and we have a lot of hand therapists that work with the Oregon public, but this is an interesting one. She provides education to therapists in other states working with soldiers who are coming home from war with amputations, and it's a very particular part of occupational therapists. Genevieve Duran, in addition to working with in a rehab setting in a hospital, also works, for example, working to help make assessments with the elderly on whether or not they can drive and what adaptations they might need. Just a brief summary. Our budget is in great shape, and I'm very happy to say that we will be reducing our fees sometime in the next year. Our renewals are now 2 years, so we'll be renewing in 2008. And assuming those figures are still going up, the board will make the decision in the next two board meetings by the end of the year how much to reduce those. And I hope to get some help from Deborah Manthe and Erica Kleiner here to make sure my assumptions are in line with theirs. Some of the things we do to save money, you've heard from the other licensing boards that we do a lot of administrative sharing with our computer. We have the new scanner and a lot of database improvements. Use of the website email has increased incredibly. We actually do our own websites. Each of us go in and make those improvements. I don't even keep copies of applications anymore. They all are on the website, and that's where people go to it. Most people who contact us have already looked at the website from other states. We have two-year licensing, which is, this is our first two-year licensing, and that, of course, is a huge savings in time and money and paper and stamps and everything else. We've made some changes in our discipline. Well, first, we've been lucky because we've had less discipline. Our board, compared to some of the others, we only have 2 to 8 a year. We have been able to have pretty much all of our cases through consent order, and Representative Barnhart asked the question about whether it's a public record. With our cases, all of the cases, the licensee and the board agrees to the discipline, and this is all the way from a suspension for a felony or a public reprimand for not supervising correctly where there wasn't harm. Those consent orders never go to administrative hearings, so all our cases have been resolved in that consent order, and the consent order itself has a finding of fact, a finding of law, and what discipline both the board and the licensee have agreed to, and that becomes the public record in our case. We have also have been able to use a former board member who had a lot of experience in discipline to help us on some of the cases, much cheaper. He hardly charges us at all as opposed to a formal investigator when that's appropriate. And as I said, we've had less cases, although I caution that I think you're all aware that can change any time, so we still have to have a very big reserve for potential cases. It only takes one or two that can be very costly. Performance measures, we have three. We used to have the first one of issuing our licenses within 3 days, and that now is kept internally, and it's reflected in our customer satisfaction. We issue licenses very quickly, usually within a day or two. Our first formal performance measure is continuing education, and our licensees have to have 30 points for the 2 years. It gives them a little more flexibility. And actually, the board does not issue a license unless and until that all the licensees have them, have their continuing education. We do sometimes give a waiver. There's very few of them, or extensions of time. The board is very strict about it. They want their licensees to have those continuing education. The second measure relates to discipline and investigations. We used to have what I think is kind of an artificial goal that we have, that a lot of boards have, that we resolve them within a year. Well, because we issue, ours don't go to hearing. If you have a hearing, you have no control over how long that case might be. If the licensee hires an attorney and it goes to hearing, it can drag on, as you've heard from other boards, for years. Because ours are by consent order, our average is less than 6 months. But you don't always have control. I thought I would like to change that measure to have more what we tend to do, which is that the board does not go to administrative hearing but looks at other means, such as consent order, such as mediation or education. The board often, when there really isn't harm to the public and maybe it's a supervision issue, they'll go to the hospital or go to the facility, and some of the board members will meet with those occupational therapists and really go through and explain why what they're doing is not up to snuff, why they have to supervise better. The consent orders we've had are for public reprimands. An example is improper use of an ultrasound, but not where there was any harm, but where an office person was asked to do an ultrasound inappropriately. Suspension or denial of license. We've had one case where there were sexual relationships with a client and the board took the license away. Probation. We do have licensees under probation, working on very close supervision. I get weekly reports, the licensee, and sometimes daily if there's any issues going on, or a little less or a little more, depending on how that licensee is doing. They have to get urine tests, so we really watch. But we have very few cases, as I explained. And none of our cases go to contested case hearings, so that helps us a lot. We use the Attorney General, Assistant AG on our cases when we do need it. Or when we need legal advice. An example of when we might, as I explained, when we might use mediation or education is when an assistant, an OT assistant, is not supervised. The final measure has to do with customer satisfaction. As you see, I gave a copy in our binder. We have the customer satisfaction that we did when we relicensed people, and now I've given you a copy of the most recent one, which is even better than the other, but that's because it tends to be the new licensees who write in and fill out that survey. We also, as all of the licensing boards together, we've worked on our business continuity plan, and we're really ahead of many of the state agencies. We are small, but we actually have alternate work sites set up, so if we could not go into the Portland State Office Building tomorrow due to an earthquake, some kind of a crime happening, and we can't go in, we can work outside of our offices. We're very aware of the security concerns, so we have security checks in terms of our database. There's just a few people that have that database accessible. The rest of us leave it there, but if there was a major concern, we could have that database transferred outside of the state office building. Our revenue all comes from licensee fees, and as I said, we're in the fortunate position of being able to reduce our fees. Happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Page 35 of 64, under the tab, special reports, shows the $62,000 other payroll expense. I wonder if you might have a comment about that.
I'm sorry, that was page 35?
Page 35 of the last report in the binder under the tab special reports. Well, I don't know if it's the last report, but it's page 35, other payroll expenses.
I'm not sure if I'm seeing that page. Let's see. Oh, here we go. I'm sorry. So it's which part? Other payroll expenses?
Other payroll expenses of $62,482.
Okay.
Then you have a payroll total salary and wages of $135,000 and just the other payroll expense. I'm curious what that might be.
I think it just adds up.
What's the total of? Is that what that is?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. Right. Okay. It adds and it goes on to the next page.
Okay.
Yeah.
I apologize.
That's
a good one.
No,
it was a big number, Mr. Chair.
No,
he's never heard us.
Mr. Chair, I haven't found that number yet, so it's like we're all.
He said two presidents. He said a word.
So, are there any other queries, questions, Representative Edwards?
Yeah, I just want to verify. You said earlier that you have about 2,600 licensees.
1,450.
Right. Okay. And then on your customer satisfaction survey, the report indicates that you have a total of 34 responses.
That's, I just gave you the new ones in the last 3 or 4 months because we did our customer survey when we did our renewals last year in 06, so that's since that time. And they tend to be new licensees.
Okay, so what was the total number of responses then to your customer satisfaction survey?
When we did the general customer satisfaction, we went in and looked at what the statistically significant amount was, and I think you have to get at least 20%. I can't remember exactly. So we did the statistically significant amount overall for our total, and then we just arbitrarily sent out the survey with the renewal form. But it's interesting to note that some of those licensees, for example, said, I don't get any services from the board, and you think, well, I guess they don't consider getting a license as a service of the board. So it's all relative.
Mr. Chair,
follow up.
I'm not sure I heard an answer there. Exactly how many surveys did you receive?
I think it was around 250. I'd have to go back and check.
Okay.
Exactly.
Just a point of interest. I would recommend that in the future you relay the information for a statistically significant sample. 34 doesn't even allow for simple stat testing.
In our binder is the performance measure, which talks about the overall one.
Okay, so you have two different sets of data?
Right. These are just the new ones, and it shows you that new online customer satisfaction that the other boards mentioned, where somebody can just fill it in, and it automatically comes to us. We don't know who fills it out. It just comes in, and we have no access to it. It comes out in the chart. That's where we were talking about this new survey. But that's only a very small amount, because those are the ones we've gotten since we developed that survey. The customer satisfaction in the binder talks about the big survey we did when we did our renewals in the middle of 06.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right, we're moving right along. Board of Radiologic Technology. We have Linda Russell, Executive Director, and Mr. Ernest Wick.
Yes, sir.
Welcome. And Ms. Russell, I'll turn it over to you whenever you're prepared.
Good afternoon, Chair Gallego and members of the committee. My name is Linda Russell. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Radiologic Technology. Today with me is Ernest Wick. He's our board chair. He's also a radiologic technologist, and he is an imaging director for St. Anthony's Hospital in Pendleton. And I'm also proud to say that he was just reelected as our chair, so that's a compliment to him. And I'm going to try to get through this as quickly as possible, because we've kind of overextended our 10 minutes apiece. So I'm going to kind of fly through here, and then you can have as many questions as you feel necessary. We're also, like Felicia's board, this is our 30th year since we were created. We started licensure, it'll be 28 years this year. We started out with 1,474 licenses, and today we have 3902 is our active amount. We also have temporary licenses that fluctuate anywhere from 100 to 250, depending on which one of the temporary schools have just gotten through one of their programs. It's the limited permit program. It usually takes about 90 days maximum, and then we have a shift of licensees. That combined with the temporary radiologic technologists and their programs, they usually come to us in the last semester of their education, which is normally a 2 to 4 year, depending on their specialties. So that fluctuates just a little bit, but this is just our regular permanent licensees at 3902. We are a 9-member board. We added 2 members last session, and I think that that's been definitely an improvement. What we have is we have one position that's not specified. It can be filled by a radiologic technologist. It could be filled from another public member, and which we have done that right now. We have a public member, but he's also a licensed nuclear medicine technologist, and Peter has brought an awful lot of assets to our board, especially with working on what we have a bill in place that we're looking to have authority and bring a couple of new modalities onto our licensing field and regulatory situation. They're not new. They're pretty commonplace now. It's nuclear medicine, MRI, and ultrasound. And that's our Senate Bill 144. Currently, we're doing a little bit of an amendment, so we're with the Senate. But I talked to you today, and it should be coming back up, I think, in March 7th is our next setup. As far as our board, we're in a different situation. 3 years ago, we had a complete change, and we've been continuously improving since that change. But I sat down with Ernest, and we've tried to think of ways that we can continuously improve staff. And we really feel that cross-training is a big area that is very important. Being small, when someone is out of the office, even just for normal vacation time or anything like that, it's important that we all can do each other's jobs to a certain extent. We do background checks on all of our licensees, and I'm very proud of that. We started in November, finally got staff all the way trained. We were approved to do that last session. And this week, this following week, we go back to work tomorrow. I'm going to start my second full-time employee is going to be doing LED certification. We have a background passed, and so we're just ready to go. So that'll be real exciting. The other thing that we've done is that we've been working on our statutes. We've been before the legislature two sessions now with changes that are necessary, that the board feels is necessary, and I support the board. And we've also been working on our administrative roles. And I think that, you know, we've come a long way in a short period of time, I think. Things that needed to be done and just were overlooked, or maybe someone didn't have the same insight as the board does now. The other things that we have done recently is we switched from an old limited permit exam that basically had not been revised for several years. If in a court of law, it would not have been defensible. So we went through all the public meetings and all the meetings with our constituents, and we agreed finally that after, it took 6 years to do this process, but we agreed that switching over to the American Registry of Radiologic Technologists limited scope examination would raise that bar, would give a higher level of competency, and hopefully beyond that is that in years to come, we're hoping that, like the radiologic technologists, it will take borders down, and our limited permit holders will be able to go to those states that recognize those standards, and vice versa. So it has that kind of a silver lining. And more than that is that these individuals that are completing the education, they're able to test on a weekly basis. Before, when we proctored the exam ourselves, it was four times a year. And the way that this program rolls out with the different schools, they were lucky if they could take it three times. So I think that overall, it's just much better for everyone. Like the other boards, our website is a great tool, and we have worked quite a bit on it, actually. A lot of new things are up there. We have a whole complete section. All of the forms are up there now that were never there before. We have our customer service survey as well. Our performance measures, of course, have been up there for several years now. License verification. We also show if they've been disciplined, which is something new that was added in the last year, which I think that's a good. And they're asked to call the board if they have any questions. But I think it's important that people know that up front. And we are also part of the business continuity plan, which is we're ahead of the game where that's concerned, and we're proud of it. And getting to our performance measures, we have a few more than some of the other boards. But for the 207-209 proposed measures, our CE verification, basically our board does CE evaluation at no cost for our providers. And we do that because the limited scope licensees are required to have continuing education equal to that of our rad techs. However, it's difficult for them to get that education. So we feel that that's our way of helping them. And so this is the number, this measure actually measures how many we have approved. And we've been making progress along those lines with the number that are being offered. The one thing about computers is that various websites have directed readings on them now, so people can go and they can do a lot of CE online. And so some of the seminars where we used to go and have them, you know, at various locations in the state, are not being offered as much as they once were. So that's a kind of a fluctuating one. The CE presentations. That this part kind of goes hand in hand with that. This is our board members, Ernest. He has given a couple of them at the OSRT seminars this year. I've given a couple of talks for independent providers, and David Hanvey, who is our vice chair and also professor at OSU, he has given several talks. He he's a professor of radiation use and safety, and well, he's a, I I don't know exactly what that's it. Okay. And so he gives these talks pretty much at least two or three a year, which is helpful. I mean, because our limited permit holders are required to have 2 hours of radiation use and safety every year of continuing education. So for their two-year renewal, they have to have 4 hours. So this is helpful for the board to be able to do this. We're not meeting that as well as I'd like to say, and, you know, I've talked to Deborah about whether we should keep it or not keep it. And I'd like to keep it just to see how things go, because I like it. Even though we're not doing the kind of job I'd like to, but maybe we'll do more. I hope so. Time of licensure, we're exceeding our target. We're proud of this one. We went from... We were 3 weeks or out further when 3 years ago when we took over this, and I've asked that this be dropped to 10 business days. Actually, in reality, we're hitting it at 5 days. We've been there now. We're going into our third year, and I'm very proud of that. Automation, I think that if we can get, we've been working with our network administrator like the other boards, online renewals, once we can get that in place and they can, you know, go on with a secure website to do the credit cards, and I think that'll help everyone. I know our licensees will be happy because we get that comment a lot. When are you going to do this? Everybody else can. So I think that'll help. We're making progress, but it needs a little tweaking, and I think that will help. Customer service, we're exceeding our customer service targets. And I'm proud of that. I came to the state government from Safeway Corporation, and if those of you that are familiar with that corporation, they're all about customer service. So I kind of been all about customer service since I came to work for the board. I think it makes a difference, and so we do our best to make sure that that's what we can provide, because we're above. That sets us different, sets us apart, and we get that kind of response on our from our licensees when we ask them how we compare to other boards. I also asked to have the discipline resolution added as a new major, because I just like to keep stats on where we're doing with our investigations, with our complaints, making sure that we're staying where we need to stay. And since we are now doing the lead checks on all of our applications and initial licensees, we've already began to see an influx of cases. Most of them are getting resolved at our next appropriate board meeting, but what's happened is our licensees have had, the biggest one is our licensees have had, like, DUIs, and they went through a diversion program, and they thought that they didn't need to disclose it, so they didn't. And so here it is, you know, and in some cases it's 6, 8, 10 years, and it's past that, and so, you know, now we're catching them at it, and so it's kind of, we're going to take a little bit to go through this for the, I'd say, the next complete cycle or 2 years, and then that influx will go back down again. But right now, we've only had 15 cases in this last year. I projected out 36 based on what we've done in the past, but I think it'll come in still under that. We have a couple of performance measures in the past that I've asked to be removed. Self-reporting violations and a practice before competency I don't feel are really good measures for the agency. Basically, the practice before competency, bless you, is one that our limited permit, just the nature of the program, they can all work before they take their exams. I don't like it, but they can. And so this major really doesn't tell us anything. But you can only do one change at a time. And right now we've got them with a higher competency exam. And, you know, then we'll see how what comes of that. I think we're pretty much whizzed through those. The agency priorities. Basically, we're a one-program agency, licensure, continuing education, our complaints, investigations, and then, of course, the administration. I briefly told you about our packages. One is the board modernization. We're asking to change the name of the board over to the Oregon Board of Medical Imaging Technology, and we've changed a few other things to bring it up with today's world. And then last go around, when we added our two new board members, well, we were all kind of new, and so was my damn analyst. And we didn't ask for a package to pay for them. So here I am asking for the package approval this go around. Other than that, I think that's about it. Any questions?
Great. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair, she's very excited about her work.
That's great.
I'm a fan of the name change because it's not easy to say radiologic technology. So, Mr. Wick, congratulations on your I guess re-election would be the term.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. And with that, I think we're okay. So, thank you very much, Ms. Russell. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. Moving along, here we go. State Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. And I have written down here Brenda Felber, the Executive Director, and Nancy Dunn, the Board Chair.
Good afternoon, Representative Galizio and members of the committee. I am Brenda Felber, and I am the executive director for a rather small board with an even longer title, the Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. Nancy Dunn, who is our current board chair and an audiologist in private practice, is here with me today to help answer any questions. The Board of Examiners for Speech Pathology and Audiology was created by the 1973 legislature. The board is composed of two public members, one physician with certification from the American Board of Otolaryngology, two speech-language pathologists, and two audiologists. Audiologists and speech pathologists are practitioners that work with communication disorders such as stuttering, hearing loss, aphasia, delayed language development, and speech disorders such as stuttering and voice and articulation disorders. These are serious because our ability to communicate is our most human characteristic. Currently one director, myself, and one administrative assistant at 1.4 FTE provide administrative and clerical support to the board and serve the public. The authority and responsibilities are contained in Oregon Revised Statute Chapter 681 and Administrative Rules Chapter 335. The board serves to ensure public safety in the practice of speech-language pathology and audiology. The licensing board is comprised of just one program, and it is the goal is to protect consumers by licensing, investigating, and enforcement of the Practice Act for three types of practitioners: speech-language pathologists, speech-language pathologists, pathology assistants, and audiologists. The board currently licenses over 1,600 practitioners, and that's an increase of over 200 since January of 2005. Performance measures were originally developed under the direction of Rita Conrad of the Oregon Progress Board, and you can find a copy of them in the agent summary section beginning on page B10. And I will review them quickly right now. The first one, performance measure number one, relates to collecting ethnicity information. This is a performance measure that the board is proposing to delete because it's really outlived its usefulness as a performance measure. The board will continue to collect the data. It collects the data on every application, and it has also collected it at renewal time. So we have all of the data that's been provided on a voluntary basis in our database, and we will continue to do so. The second performance measure relates to measuring progress of a fairly recent change in the law requiring certification of speech assistants. This measure tracks the number of school districts who have certified speech assistants. And this performance measure is providing important information to the board on compliance with the law in the schools. The third performance measure relates to continuing education requirements. The board's been able to make informed decisions regarding sanctions and increased education and communication based on the results from this measure. And the fourth measure, which is our newest measure, is the measure of customer satisfaction. Our beginning strategy, which just started in last year, 2006, has been to notify customers via the agency website and in the signature portion of emails that the board has a survey and asks that they complete it. 88% of our surveyed customers rated our services good or excellent. Given the trend in increase in complaints, the board is considering adding an additional performance measure related to consumer protection or the processing of complaints. Recent enhancements in the board database will enable us to do this in a more automated fashion, which is important given that we're just 1.4 FTE. The board will also include a performance measure related to best practices for boards and commissions. One thing that I need to speak to that the other boards have not addressed is that the board is currently requesting an increase in limitation for the current biennium as well as the next biennium to cover actual attorney general expense and anticipated expenses related to administrative hearings. Although the board received approval for an option package last session to increase attorney general expenses, the limitation for this category is still not adequate. Due to changes in counsel, we've had three different attorneys assigned to us this biennium as well as a couple of years ago. We've had a steady increase in disciplinary cases, and the board now has the ability to fine non-licensees for inaccurate representation. The board received three requests for hearings in 1 month alone. Two hearings are expected to take place in this biennium, and the board is recognizing this trend and wants to be prepared to handle the additional expense in the next biennium. The board has reported many actions that they've taken over the years to control costs and have done a number of the things that other boards have reported today. Given that the agency is managed by two staff, the need to be cost-effective is routine. Staff, along with board members, continually looks at process and results. The board recognizes its duty and strives to protect the public by ensuring qualified and accountable practitioners. And that is the end of my report. I would be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a question for Ms. Nampi, but I've noticed in almost all of these small agency presentations, they bring forward the issue of the salary of the director and the fact that they're not in the PAM classification system, that they're in a pre-existing system to that, and the difficulties that it gives them. And DAS has denied their request to increase the salaries or change the classifications. Do you have any information about where that discussion is in DAS, whether this is the end of it, or are they looking at reclassifying them? What's going on here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, this is similar to the issue that the psychologist examiners brought forward, and I believe that, and I should have brushed up on this, but I believe that there are dollars set aside in the compensation plan that you fund dollar amount for management, the review of management salaries. I'll look at Eric if I can get a nod. And I believe that that's where this was going to be taken care of. In other words, the issue was that it's a statewide issue, not an individual agency issue, and it is on the Department of Administrative Services radar screen, and that's the mechanism that they were going to use to take care of it as opposed to the policy packages they need to take it.
So are they going to do a reclassification and then a new salary schedule based on the new classification for each of these positions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I don't know exactly what the outcome would be but in this particular case. But, for example, if it is that the classification is outdated, historically, if they got rid of a classification out of the comp plan, then they would allocate everybody who's in that old classification to a new classification, and then if it's an existing one, then the salary would be follow that particular classification. And so that's the way I think that at least with the I believe it's titled executive officer, and I think the point that has been made in their packages and their agency requests was that I think there's like nine people in that classification statewide, and the idea is that it's obsolete now. And so I would imagine that's the way that they're going to handle it.
Mr. Chair, would you be amenable to asking the DAS director if he would write us a letter outlining what the process is going to be and the timeline and that kind of stuff? So that it's kind of unnerving to see this in all these little budgets, and I think that there has been...
The question has been
raised
with the DAS director, and the topic was raised in the executive department prior to that time putting together the governor's budget, and it appears that there was not the desire to do that now at this particular juncture. We can certainly, the director at DAS is certainly be happy, I'm sure, to drop us a note on it to either this committee or to the General Government Committee or both, because when this issue came up before, I didn't pursue it with DAS, and seemed unfair, and I think the director concurred that it was unfair. But with Ms. Matthews, comments here on this, maybe there is a plan to try to do something besides the total reclassification, do something as far as compensation. That may well be the case. I think there's, if I understand part of it correctly, there's an enormous amount of work needs to go into reclassifying or redoing the classification system in state government. And I think that was not a chore they wanted to undertake on a relatively short notice type of thing.
So then,
it goes beyond this particular issue to a whole bunch of categories.
The question that I would be interested in, I know, having worked on the classification system, and quite frankly, it's a mystery to me how it even works. It's incredibly complicated and arcane.
Yeah.
But it seems like we have a small number of people that aren't even in the system that they're talking about not working. And I think it would be, from the interest of just understanding how this is going to be resolved, to get more information on how DAS and the governor's office is going to look at bringing these people into a system, and then are they going to wait until they realign the system that they bring them into to give them equity? Or I'm just curious, because it seems like there is an issue here around the funding of these just few odd positions.
And Representative Morgan, I see a lot of heads nodding, and I sit on the General Government Subcommittee where Representative Jensen is the chair, and as he mentioned, we did have a discussion, and I know he pursued this, so we should arguably put some pressure as well. So, Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with that. I think it is important to put some pressure on. It isn't simply a matter of unfairness. It becomes a practical problem for small agencies to train up a person to operate the place and then lose them because they can't pay them adequately. And so it's quite a bit more than just a matter of unfairness. It becomes a matter of practical management for these small agencies for whom finding the right person, getting them used to the agency, operating it, and then because they're not being paid adequately, they find another job that has commensurate responsibilities but quite a bit better pay. I think that's the issue that we should focus on, and I really appreciate Representative Morgan's comments on the issue.
Representative Jensen.
Yeah, if I may, I certainly concur with Representative Barnhart and Representative Morgan and everyone else on this. But like you, Representative Morgan, When I started to take a look at the classification system, it's a maze that, at least in the time elements that I thought we had been with NASP, that I didn't want to try to, you know, dig too much into it for fear that I'd be here next September.
Well, hopefully you'd be here by yourself.
The rest of us kind of like someone else. I can't keep the rest of you here. I certainly wouldn't want to be here.
Well, I do agree, Mr. Chair, that the overall issue of the classifications and the compensation system is one for general government, but I think that we do have an interest in just these few positions with these agencies that are in our committee.
Yes, and I will direct the request in a nice manner that Deborah will look into this on behalf of the committee, and I would love to talk. Maybe the two of us together could go sally forth and
go for
yes, and
arm wrestle.
Yes, and revisit this. But no, I do want you to look into this on behalf and see what kind of a response we can get and go from there. Senator Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, you will note that the BAM analyst has been taking a lot of careful notes as you've been speaking.
Probably something along the lines of good luck understanding exactly how the classification
I heard that story before.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
See you in December.
Right, that's right. So, thank you, Representative Morgan. Any other questions for Ms. Felber? Well, thank you very much.
Thank
Raised
you for
important
your consideration.
Issues. Thank you. One more. Today, we have the Board of Examiners of Lyon, licensed dietitians, and Mr. Douglas Van Fleet.
Thank you.
Chairman DeLizio, members of the committee, I am Douglas Van Fleet, the Executive Secretary of the Board of Examiners.
Senator, will you move the microphone a little closer, if you can?
How's this?
That's better, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much.
I am Douglas Van Fleet, the Executive Secretary of the Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians. A licensed dietitian is a person who you have probably met when you were a patient in a hospital, or a student in a school district, a person who is responsible for the accurate and prompt administration of the diet to large numbers of persons, and who is absolutely essential in the practice of what is called medical nutrition therapy, which is the special therapy that persons receive who are patients in kidney treatment centers, electrophoresis, for example. There are approximately 450 licensed dietitians in Oregon. That's about 13% more than there were 2 years ago. They receive two-year licenses with an expiration date of October 31st of the odd-numbered year. The best picture of our performance measures is on pages B10 to B12 in the agency summary section of the binder. The first performance measure there is the percentage of complaints determined to be unfounded or resulting in a final order within 9 months. We have never had trouble meeting the 9 months period. One of the reasons is that the license is voluntary. A person need not have a license in order to practice dietetics. They need to have a license if they want to call themselves licensed. So there are many persons practicing dietetics who do not come under the supervision of the board. And the other reason is that in the 17-year history of the board, one licensee has had a complaint registered against them. That was last year, and the complaint was found to be unfounded. The second performance...
Mr. Beckley, just for clarification from my own, so you can call, in Oregon, a person can call themselves a dietitian.
Yes.
And that's okay, they just...
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
We are one of three state licensing agencies that have voluntary licenses that are basically title protection statutes, and the license that we issue is really a certificate legally, because it doesn't bind the practice of the person who holds it. In customer service, we have queried our licensees with their most recent renewal to see how they feel about our overall service, our timeliness, our accuracy, helpfulness, expertise, and availability of information. Each of those had a percentile answer that was in the 90s or very close. 89% said they were excellent. We were excellent or good in the availability of information. One of the problems there is that the agency has a 0.3 FTE staff, and it's easy for a person to call the office and find no one there. So on our voice message greeting, I put my cell telephone number, and I've been receiving a few telephone calls out and about. Number four performance measure is the percentage of total best practices met by the board. Last year was the first year we delved into that. I had not known previously that there were best practices, and I was not current with the board in showing them from one meeting to the next what our financial status was. So we are now doing that. Each time, and I expect to come up by 2009 to have 100% of best practices acquainted to the board and presumably met by the board. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Manfleet, you're very efficient.
Appreciate that. Are there questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
That anyone who has been the recipient of the professional advice of this group of people, certainly it is a miracle that they don't have more complaints. they have a very strange perception of what it is that the human being should consume.
Mr. Van Fleet, I have to give you the opportunity to respond.
Chairman Belizio, members of the committee, Representative Jensen, I too have been a hospital patient, and I think we agree on that. And presumably, the food has something to do with the short stay.
Oh, okay.
That was excellent.
Any other? He's also very quick.
Yes, he is. I'm getting nervous already. Any other questions or comments? Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Van Fleet. And thank you to everybody who was here today to testify. If anyone on the committee has questions, or I'm sure we'll get those to you. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bills 5029 and 5030. And with that, we are adjourned.